Hello, and welcome to this AAT podcast on time management skills. Every day, we're all given the same amount of time. 24 hours, or to put it another way, 1,440 minutes, or we could even say 86,400 seconds. How we choose to spend those hours, minutes and seconds differs from person to person. Why is it then that some people sail through life managing to fit everything in and still achieve their goals, whereas others are constantly running around, tearing their hair out, getting more and more stressed just to survive each day and achieving very little? Unfortunately, I can't magic a few more hours in the day or give you more time to store up for future use, but I can give you tips on how to spend the time you have to be more productive and more effective. Hello, my name is Melanie Cassar. I'm a member of the AAT and have been in the accounting profession for more than 20 years. During my career, I've had to manage a very busy work schedule whilst trying to still achieve a life outside work. I have to admit, I didn't always get it right, which is why I can understand where you're coming from. These days, I run my own training consultancy business, providing training in various management skills. And I also teach some exam courses, including AAT. I guess you've joined this podcast today because, like many, you're one of those people who are constantly busy and there never seem to be enough hours in the day. So you must know what poor time management looks like and feels like. Just think about this for a moment. So what did you think about? Were you stressed, tearing your hair out, being disorganised, never achieving anything, letting people down, including your family and friends? So what are the things that cause you to run out of time each day? Are they self-imposed or imposed by others? As you listen to this podcast, the answer to this question should become clear, leading to good time management and a life where you're more in control, more satisfied and less stressed. So this is what I'm going to cover in this session. First of all, prioritising. Many of you probably already use to-do lists, but are you using them effectively? Next, planning. The importance of planning cannot be underestimated. Good planning will avoid the need to be constantly firefighting. Finally, performance. Prioritising and planning are all well and good, but will they stop us procrastinating or stop the interruptions? Okay, so let's make a start. How do you prioritise your workload? Many people use to-do lists, and these are a good thing in terms of taking a look at what you have on. So what's on your current to-do list? Take a few moments to have a look at your list or think about this. If you're sitting at your desk, it's worth pausing this recording and making a list if you haven't already done one. Make it as detailed as possible. For example, don't just write phone calls, but write phone Jenny at ABC Limited, re late payment, etc. Having prepared your to-do list, how are you going to decide what you're going to do first and then after that? Most people will make this decision based on an item's urgency or importance. An item is urgent if it must be done now or today, whereas important items help you to achieve your goals. They are the things that are important to you. So next, I'd like you to look at your to-do list and mark against each item whether they are important or urgent or both. You can mark an I or a U next to them. If necessary, pause this recording. Now you've assigned an I or U score against each of your items, we are now going to consider Stephen Covey's time management tool, the Important and Urgency Matrix. Stephen Covey, the author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, said we can categorise our to-do list into one of four sections of a quadrant. They can be urgent and important, urgent but not important but not urgent, or not important and not urgent. We're going to consider each of these in turn, but first take a look again at your to-do list and assign each item to one of these quadrants. Once again, you can pause the recording if you're sitting at your desk to do this. Is there a pattern arising? Do you have lots of items in one section? People who struggle with time management tend to have a lot of items in the urgent sections, whether they are urgent and important or urgent but not important. So let's have a look at what they mean. First of all, urgent and important. These are the items that should be at the top of our to-do list. They must be done now or today and by you. This is the do section. In this section, we are busy and achieving lots towards our goals. This could include a job you agree to deliver by lunchtime today, so you need to do your final review and finalise the report this morning. It's urgent because it was promised by lunchtime today and it's not yet finished, and it's important because providing excellent client service is one of your goals. Alternatively, it could include sorting your computer out after it crashed. It's urgent because you can't do any work without it, so it needs to be sorted now. And it's important because the work you do to achieve your goals is stored on the computer. But how many items from your to-do list are in this section? If too many, you're going to crash and burn. There simply won't be enough hours in the day to deliver the quantity of work to the quality expected. You should therefore consider whether the tasks are really urgent. Must they be done now or today? Can an extension to the deadline be negotiated? Is the item really important? Remember, this means important to you in achieving your goals. Perhaps one or more of your items belong in the next section. This is urgent but not important. We all have things to do which aren't necessarily going to help us achieve our goals and climb the corporate ladder, but nevertheless are still urgent. For example, if the phone rings, it creates a sense of urgency to answer it. But how do you know who's on the other end and whether it's going to be important? Another example is from my experience of working for a firm of accountants. One of the tasks I least enjoyed doing was my weekly timesheet. It usually needed to be completed and submitted by 5 p.m. each Friday. Therefore, if not completed by 4:30 p.m. on Friday, it suddenly became urgent. However, doing this was not going to help me achieve my goals or impact on my career progression. Therefore, on occasions where I simply didn't have time to do this, I delegated it to my secretary after giving her the information she needed to do this. Another example is attendance at meetings. On the day of the meeting, it's urgent. However, consider if your attendance is really necessary. Do you have a contribution to make or an agenda item to lead? If not, perhaps it's not important, so consider not attending. But do make sure you receive minutes afterwards and follow up on any action points which affect you. Items in this section should be delegated to somebody else. They are urgent and need to be done, but they don't necessarily need to be done by you. For more advice on delegation skills, please listen to my AAT podcast on this subject. Next, we have items that are important but not urgent. This is where you have important items on your to-do list, but they are not yet urgent. However, if left long enough, they will become urgent. For example, it's the start of a new month. You know that by the month end, you must issue a number of client fee notes. These are important because you have targets to deliver in terms of the fees you raise each month. You could leave this until the last day of the month when it becomes urgent, but this is very risky as you don't know what other urgent work will come up on that day. As you know about it now, you'd have two more sensible options. First of all, you can diarise it. Plan to deal with this task in the second or third week of the month and set aside time in your diary to do it on that day. Alternatively, you could delegate it to a more junior member of staff. Whilst it might not seem right to delegate important tasks, they provide valuable development opportunities to more junior members of staff, setting them in good stead for their own promotion opportunities. This will then free you up to focus on other more urgent and important tasks that will challenge you, as well as helping to practice your own delegation skills. For items in your to-do list which are important but not urgent, you should either diarise them, ensuring they are done before they become urgent, or delegate them. Finally, we have the items that are not important and not urgent. If you have items in this section, You need to consider whether you should be doing them at all. So stop doing them. Often, these are not actually on your to-do list, but crop up during the day and take time. Examples include reading junk emails, playing solitaire, having long chats at the coffee machine. I remember when I worked at KPMG, originally my job was based in one local office. I then took on a regional role, which meant I spent a lot of time away from my local office. I found that whenever I went back to work in my original office, so much time was wasted catching up with old colleagues who were interested to hear how I was getting on that I got very little done. I realised that I would need to find a way to politely tell these people that I was too busy to talk at the time or find another solution. What actually happened was both. I found another office to work in the same building, so I didn't actually run into so many people. Then I contacted some of my old colleagues by email to let them know I was around if they wanted to meet for a quick coffee or lunch. And I can actually recall having coffee and lunch with some colleagues to catch up, but this was on our own time. For items which you've identified as not important and not urgent, dump them. Okay, so let's recap. We've now considered all four sections in Covey's time management matrix. Take some time to review your to-do list again. Are you happy with your important and urgent assignments? Consider putting them into four separate lists, being urgent and important. These are the things you're going to do. Urgent but not important. These are the things you're going to delegate. Important but not urgent. These are the things you're going to diarise or delegate. And then finally, not important and not urgent. These are the things you're going to stop doing, so dump them. Once in these new lists, if there seem to be too many items in the urgent categories, you're constantly going to be firefighting, ultimately leading to stress. So consider again, are they really urgent or could you delegate them? Spending time on things that are urgent but not important means that you're tearing around for nothing as you're not achieving anything towards your goals. So you should therefore focus on items that are important and delegate others. The ideal place to be is in the urgent but not important section. This gives you time to plan and potentially get ahead of yourself. In fact, good planning avoids having lots of items in the urgent category. If you can get to a task before it becomes urgent, it will give you more quality time and less stress. Okay, having prioritised your to-do list, you now need to put it into a plan. Having written many a to-do list over the years, handwritten on paper and scribbled out and added to each day, I now recommend the use of a computerised calendar or diary programme such as Outlook Calendar. Take your to-do list and put the items on it in your Outlook or similar calendar. For example, urgent and important tasks go in your diary for today, whereas not urgent tasks can be diarised for next week, etc. When putting things into your diary, make sure you block out sufficient time. For example, if you estimate a task will take 1 hour, then block out 1.5 hours. In fact, as a rule, add 50% onto your estimated time, as things rarely take the time we estimate, so it allows for any overruns or interruptions. It also means that if you do finish the task early, you have some breathing space to reassess your to-do list before moving on to the next task. If you are to attend a meeting, add in the time for attending the meeting and include any travel time if the meeting is not in the office. At the same time, consider any actions or work to be done before the meeting. Is there an agenda to prepare or research to be done ahead of the meeting? If so, put time in your diary to do this or delegate this. Also, what will happen after the meeting? Generally, most meetings I've been to result in a list of action points, so plan the time to deal with these when diarising the meeting. If you're to write the meeting minutes, plan the time to do this immediately after the meeting so the notes are fresh in your mind. It also allows the meeting notes to be circulated and agreed as soon as possible after the meeting whilst things are fresh in people's minds, so any action points can be started. Many people don't take a lunch break these days because they're too busy. Well, if you block out 1 hour each day in your diary for lunch, you'll stand a much better chance of actually taking that break rather than filling the time with more work. When considering when to do a task, consider imposing an earlier false deadline. Many people think a deadline is the date for delivery. However, the deadline is the final date for delivery. There's nothing to stop you delivering early. By imposing an earlier false deadline, you give yourself space and time if any unforeseen items arise in the work or other urgent work comes in and takes over. But more importantly, you have the opportunity to deliver early and really impress the client or your boss. Plan what to delegate and set aside time for this. Include time to plan the delegation, what work to delegate, who you're going to delegate it to, and what you're going to say. Organise the delegation meeting and then set aside time to review the work done. You will find that once you've put all the items from your to-do list into your Outlook calendar in this way, all of a sudden you're going to look very busy. However, this is a good tool to say to anyone who comes along and asks you to do more, "I'm already busy, just look at my calendar." So, we now know how to prioritise our workload and how to plan it. So now, let's look at some of the things that might get in our way of actually performing the work as planned. We're going to consider two areas which might prevent us from completing the work as planned. These are interruptions and procrastination. So what can you do if you're midway through a piece of work and the phone rings or your email pings to let you know you've got new mail? Or perhaps a work colleague stops by for a chat or to discuss another piece of work? These are the type of interruptions which prevent us from completing our work efficiently. We stop what we're doing to pay attention to these and then have to spend time recapping where we'd got to when we pick the work up again later. Here are a few tips for dealing with interruptions such as these. For phone calls, when the phone rings, we don't usually know who's on the other end or what they're going to say. So how do we know if it's urgent or important? You can leave voicemail to pick up your call. After all, if the person really needs to speak to you, they can leave a message or they can call another colleague if it's really urgent and they realise you're not contactable. You'll need to leave an appropriate message giving contact details of an alternative person to call, for example, your secretary. And you must make sure you plan to listen to the messages, so diarise it. Alternatively, you could divert your calls to a colleague or secretary with their prior approval, asking them to vet the calls first to ensure that you're only interrupted if really necessary. For emails, remove the ping sound, as this is very disrupting, even if you don't actually read the email. If working on some urgent and important work, put your out-of-office message on so people know you're unavailable and who else to contact if the matter's urgent. Schedule some time in your diary to review emails. This could be 15 minutes at the start of the day, 15 minutes after lunch, and then 15 minutes at the end of the day. For interruptions where a colleague comes to your desk, stand up and take control of the conversation. Don't let you or them get comfortable and slip into non-relevant chit-chat. If possible, go and work in a quiet room or another office. Or perhaps you could arrange to work from home and get some quiet time to complete an urgent piece of work. If doing this, once again, let people know that you're unavailable by letting your secretary know your whereabouts, setting your voicemail message and out-of-office assistant for email. None of these things are difficult to do and will have a huge impact on your efficiency and effectiveness. Now let's consider procrastination. This is where we delay or put off starting or completing a task. This can lead to anxiety or stress, particularly as the deadline looms. An example I'm sure many can relate to is studying for exams. I can remember tucking myself away at home for the weekend to study as the exams drew closer, to find myself constantly distracted by the things around me. In fact, I don't think my house ever looked so clean. Every time I spotted the slightest thing, a mark or a cobweb, I was up with my duster polishing to get rid of it, rather than to get my head down and study. By the end of the day, I pretty much wasted my weekend and my stress levels increased as I then knew I had less time to study. We tend to put off tasks which we'd rather not do. So perhaps it's because we find the task boring, not enjoyable, or perhaps it's complex or just so big we don't know where to start. Psychologists have carried out studies which show the reasons why we procrastinate include fear of failure. We know our efforts are going to be evaluated by somebody else. So perhaps, in my example, the fear of failure at the exam was the reason. Next is perfectionism, where we delay starting a project until we know exactly what we're going to do so we get it right the first time. We might spend too much time planning without actually getting on to do the work. Next, for those boring tasks. Some tasks are just boring, but they still need to be done, whether by you or by delegating to someone else. A degree of self-discipline is needed to get this done. So, what can we do about this? Well, recognising it is the first step. I knew that I wasn't getting much study done at home, so I changed my study schedule to arrive at work 1 hour early each day and to do 1 hour of focused study before work. This worked really well because I knew I only had an hour to get the work done as opposed to the whole weekend, so it created the urgency for me to get my head down and focus on the work. I was more productive in that 1 hour than for a whole weekend. Other things you can do include diarise the task for a time when you feel you'll be ready to tackle it. As you get it into your diary, make a commitment to yourself to get this done so that you can then move on to other things that you enjoy more. Plan for the task. For example, I don't actually like discussing fees. After all, who likes discussing money? So I tend to diarise when I want to speak to a client about fees. But then I also diarise some time beforehand to get all the information I need to think about and what I want to say and how to say it. This makes the actual conversation a lot easier. Break large tasks down into smaller tasks and set deadlines for each stage. Once you start a task, make a commitment to yourself to complete it. This might mean taking yourself to a different place, for example, a spare office or to work at home, provided the other place does not have distractions for you. In my exam study example, I found home too distracting, but could actually work more effectively in the office when no one else was around. If the task is unclear, arrange to speak to your manager or the client to fully understand what they're asking of you. Don't be afraid to ask what the end product looks like. For example, do they want a one-page letter or do they want a 30-page report? These are just some of the suggestions to help if you think you're the type of person to procrastinate. But any solution will require acknowledgement and then self-discipline from you. Okay, we've now covered all the items planned for this podcast, so let's recap. First of all, we looked at prioritising the tasks on our to-do list. This involved considering their level of importance to us and their urgency. This resulted in us deciding whether to do the tasks ourselves today or later, or whether to delegate the task or dump it altogether. Then we looked at planning using Outlook Calendar or a similar computer program. This is a very useful and visual representation of your to-do list that is easy to add to or amend as necessary. Finally, we looked at performance and the sorts of things that could get in the way of you achieving your planned workload. This included dealing with interruptions such as phone calls, emails, or chatting to colleagues. And then we looked at procrastination, where we put off doing tasks that we're not really looking forward to for one reason or another. To get over this takes recognition and a level of self-discipline. If all we achieve each day is the most important task on our daily list, we're going to achieve lots. By taking on board some of the advice in this podcast, you can make the most out of your daily allowance of 24 hours, 1,440 minutes, or 86,400 seconds, leaving more time available to enjoy life. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast, but it's only going to be useful if you do actually go away and put into practice the new things you've learned. Good luck.